Hello, I'm Linda Huey, and this is Meet the Doctors, the show that lets you hear what doctors have to say about their lives, their work, their passions, and what they foresee for the future. Today's guest is neurosurgeon Dr. Kaver Siddique at Beverly Hills Spine Surgery. He'll tell us about his plans for the $24 million, 38,000 square foot building he bought in Beverly Hills. This episode of Meet the Doctors is brought to you by Complete PT Pool and Land Physical Therapy. Whether you're trying to prevent knee surgery or recovering from shoulder, hip, or back pain, Complete PT offers you the most advanced pool therapy in combination with traditional land therapy. You don't need to know how to swim or even get your hair wet. The 92-degree saltwater pool soothes joints and muscles and helps reduce pain immediately. Visit CompletePT.com. That's CompletePT.com. Now let's meet neurosurgeon Dr. Kaver Siddique. We're here in Beverly Hills at the Beverly Hills Spine Center with Dr. Kaver Siddique. Thanks so much for being with Meet the Doctors.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're at the point in your career where everything is expanding, and it must feel great to be at the top of your game.
Well, there's always more work to be done, that's for sure.
Always. But before we get to the wonderful things that you're doing now, let's back up and see, how did you get here? Where were you born and raised?
I'm Scottish born.
So no kidding.
Still have my British passport.
Uh-huh.
Came to the U.S. when I was 10.
Uh-huh.
The entire family moved over. And been here ever since.
You know, it's amazing to me how many of the top doctors that I've been interviewing are either immigrants themselves or first generation, their parents immigrated. All the high-level people moved to the U.S., the ones who are going to make it good.
Isn't that the story of America?
It is,
yes. It's a good one, too.
Yeah, it is. Now, I want to know, when was that moment that you knew you wanted to be a doctor? Did you come from a family of doctors?
I did not. My dad was a bus driver, grocery store owner. He was a working guy.
Mm-hmm.
And although I did have two uncles that are in medicine, but I didn't have much contact with them in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
They were in a different state and different area. So, in the beginning, we're in a different country. But I used to tell people when I was a freshman in high school that not only do I want to do medicine, but specifically become a neurosurgeon.
You already knew that.
I knew that. I was 12 years old, freshman in high school.
What had given you that even knowledge that it existed?
So for me, it was not I had any experience or interaction with neurosurgeons, because I didn't. I think most of it was because I've always been the go-get-em and want to do the top brand or the top specialty. And at that time, neurosurgery was difficult to get into.
Uh-huh.
It still is to some extent, but other specialties are just as hard or harder now.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I wanted to be at my top of the game. And for me at that time, neurosurgery was something that was viewed as that.
So you already knew you wanted to be a neurosurgeon when you started your undergraduate work at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign.
By then, yes. And I would say it in high school, but that was my one objective. And I remember those MTV shows, Driven, or it was way back 10, 15 years ago, where they interview a musician or a celebrity, and they would always say, yeah, I've been focused and driven to do one thing.
That was my story. That was you. Okay. After you graduated, then you moved slightly west to Peoria, Illinois to go to med school at the University of Illinois College of Medicine. Why'd you choose that school?
I stayed in the U of I system for even many more years past that, and I just felt at home at U of I.
Then you came west to the Marshall School of Medicine at USC to do your MBA next. It was a two-year program.
Yeah, and that was a number of years after I had moved here. I came west because I got tired of the Midwest winters, wanted to get out of the snow,
mm-hmm.
you know, put my toes in the sand and bask in the sun. So, yeah, I came west, and I started the MBA program at USC. That's
right.
An executive program. And by that point, I was several years in practice, and I found myself spending more time managing the practice and doing the economics of the group. And so It was funny. I would, you know, those Just for Dummies books that everything from X, Y, and Z.
I think we all used them a decade or so ago.
And so, you know, I would start reading those about management for dummies and marketing for dummies and financial statements for dummies. And so I figured, you know, might as well just go to school and get a degree because I was spending so much time trying to soak up information in how to run a business.
So you were going to the MBA school at USC, and you were practicing at the same time?
I was, yes.
Where were you practicing then?
Here.
At Cedars?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I don't know how you did both, but you got through it.
Well, it was easy, actually, because, you know, I was motivated and committed to doing it, and if you enjoy something, you make the time for it.
Yeah, yeah. So let me just pick the chronology right. You went to undergraduate school at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign.
Then med school. At University of Illinois in Peoria, and then a neurosurgery residency. I stayed in Peoria. That was an additional 6 years. Then I came out here and did a one-year fellowship in spine surgery at Cedars-Sinai. And then a number of years later, and started the two-year MBA program.
But even before you got your MBA in 2012, you were starting some very entrepreneurial projects. In 2007, you were the president and CEO of Beverly Hills Spine Surgery, the one that you're here with now, but you had started it 12 years ago. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, it started with Brian Perry, who's my colleague and another physician, and we started the group together at that time.
And you were at Cedars, but you had already incorporated as a separate group.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. And then in 2009, you were the president and CEO of Doctors Outpatient Center for Surgery, which is where we are now, but you didn't have this building yet.
No, the building came later, and the surgery center, Doctors Outpatient Center for Surgery, was something that Dr. Perry and I started at the same time. And the understanding was that we knew that spine surgery was heading in a direction where fewer and fewer cases were going to be done in an inpatient or a hospital setting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to make sure we take advantage of that in a sense that do smaller, better, faster, and cheaper. That's where healthcare was going, more so in spine surgery. So we started the surgery center with the intent of doing it faster, better, cheaper.
And without the potential for MRSA in a hospital.
You can get MRSA anywhere, that's correct, but the studies have shown that the infection rates at a surgery center are lower than in an inpatient setting.
Well, that's another big plus.
And that's been shown in multiple studies and nationwide.
Well, that's such an important point that people need to pay attention to. You've given many talks on advanced spine surgical techniques, and you've taught surgical courses to others, neurosurgeons and even orthopedic surgeons. What's the best part of teaching to you?
You know, in medicine, they say, see one, do one, teach one.
Oh, okay.
So it's a natural evolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you've done as many cases as we have, then it's the intent is to go out and start teaching.
And are you still teaching today? Do you have any fellows coming here to learn from you? Or
I'm not directly involved in the educational part of it anymore, mm-hmm. but we're teaching them the business of medicine. So I spend a lot more time now showing other people how we did it. Started the surgery center, now the hospital, the building, how to form an expanded group. So all of these things, business aspects of medicine, is what I enjoy teaching now.
Wow. And then I saw that in 2015, Becker's Spine Review, it's an online publication, they wrote, Dr. Sadiq buys a $24 million, 38,000 square foot building in Beverly Hills for the practice expansion. Did you buy it in 2015?
Yes, but there's other people that get the credit for that. I was one of the managing partners, Dr. Perry again. He and I came up with the idea, and we still co-manage it to this day, and then we bought in other partners who have been integral in making it a success.
Because that's a big number, and I'm thinking, wow, you had to put some people together and some deals together to be able to make that happen.
Well, we did. It didn't come out of my pocketbook, that's for sure.
Okay. What does it mean that you perform image-guided spine surgery? That was a phrase that caught my eye.
So as with any type of career or business, technology keeps advancing.
Mm-hmm.
And in spine surgery, we're doing it better, faster, cheaper, in part because we have image-guided systems that help us be more accurate. And there's multiple ones that are available on the market today, but the idea is that you use technology to reduce errors.
Because you could put an MRI or a CT scan into a computer that will then help guide your placement of something?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. Give me an example so our listeners will know what we're talking about.
So, well, for instance, when we do fusions of the spine or back fusions, we put pedicle screws or screws. Each screw is about the size of my pinky. So as you can imagine, you know, there's a certain part of the bone that you can put it in or where it should be put in of your spine. But if you're off, you may accidentally hit a nerve, which obviously, as it sounds, would be bad. So now we're very good at using our own sense and our knowledge of anatomy that we don't need. We don't have to use image-guided technology, but the tech exists, which does reduce errors. So if it works, you know, and it helps reduce errors, then we use it.
Sure, that makes perfect sense. Now, you have a combination of orthopedic and neurosurgeons here. Does that mean that the patients get the best of both worlds?
And that's the idea, because spine surgeons come from two backgrounds, either orthopedic or neurosurgery. There is a few nuances in training that are different between the two, but for the most part, we consider ourselves spine surgeons. So we knew that if we wanted to be spine surgeons, we have to bring in both the ortho and neuro parts.
What do you do, for instance, that an orthopedic doctor wouldn't do?
Neurosurgeons tend to have more experience with spinal cord tumors, for instance, or operating within the spinal cord or within a nerve, whereas orthopedic surgeons tend to have more experience with deformity or scoliosis. So those are the two major differences, but truth be told, neurosurgeons do deformity or scoliosis, and orthopedic surgeons, more often with a neurosurgeon, do operate on spinal cord tumors as well.
Now, you say that you're a spine specialist. Does that mean that you don't do any brain surgeries?
Not anymore. I stopped doing it years ago.
Did you do some?
Yeah, in the beginning. I mean, I'm a neurosurgeon, but I'm board certified as a neurosurgeon, so I have the privileges to do brain tumors and those types of things. But as in anything, you do something, you do it well. And so it's hard to be a general neurosurgeon where you do everything, meaning brain tumors, brain aneurysm, pediatrics, spine surgery, functional neurosurgery. It's hard to be, as you can imagine, the more you do something, the better you're at.
So you pick a niche.
Right. So you pick a niche. And for me, that was, and many other people, spine surgery. So I do just spine. And so we have a lot more experience when you just stick to a certain specialty.
Now, I had the pleasure of being able to watch you and Dr. Alex Rizzulli do an artificial disc replacement on a cervical spine patient that was outpatient. And I saw that the two of you are working together. Do most of the surgeries have two people in the operating room?
That's what we prefer. Mm-hmm. So our group is focused on having two pairs of hands, or two surgeons, two attendings in the room helping each other. It makes it more efficient, faster, it reduces errors, in our opinion. And we enjoy the people we work with. So, you know, you get that banter, which makes it a fun day at work.
It's having a teammate and an extra set of eyes.
That's correct.
Yeah. So can you tell me a success story of something that you at the beginning thought, oh, I don't know if this is going to work out or not, and yet it surprised you and it turned into something fabulous?
You know, there's, in terms of patient care, I mean, there've been many stories where patients are in significant pain or they have weakness, whether it be a foot drop or partial paralysis, and whether it be from trauma or just a degenerative case, and we've operated on them, and it's always a good feeling when you see patients have improvement over time, and they have either pain or disability, and they get better.
And if you see something that has gone wrong, what happens then?
Those are always the tough cases, and everybody makes mistakes, and what happens then is you have to own it. You have to live up to it. You have to tell the patient, and you help the patient. You help guide the patient through the problem and try to get them through it.
So, how many patients do you see in a day in the clinic? 10, 15, 20?
Yeah, about that many, between that range.
How many will end up in your operating room?
Fewer than 10%.
Because you are like Dr. Rizzulli saying that fewer than 10% of the people need spine surgery.
Well, yeah, because most people have a problem, whether it be back or neck pain, that can get better without an operation.
So what do you do?
You know, many patients that see us, you know, they just want to know that they don't need surgery.
Yeah. Yes, but just you telling them makes them feel better, probably.
Yes, it does. I mean, you know, people, they come in, they're nervous, and then they walk out knowing that, okay, they got a problem, but they don't need to be cut on. And so that's soothing.
And what conservative alternatives do you give them?
Therapy, therapy, therapy. So I avoid giving patients medications, more so than narcotics. As we all know, they're way overused. Yes. There's so much abuse. People die from them. And the three mainstays of treatment are surgery, medication, mm-hmm. or therapy.
Therapy, yeah.
Well, most people don't need surgery, and I try to tell them to avoid medication. So physical therapy, whether that be core exercises, you know, and yeah. and by therapy, I mean entire gambit, you know, from physical therapy to chiropractic treatment mm-hmm. to home exercises, Pilates, yoga, et cetera, non-impact exercises. So I put all of that in the same category of therapy.
And trying to have them develop a lifestyle of fitness is going to keep that strength that they develop during the time they're recovering. Because I don't know about you, but so often in my physical therapy practice, people get better there. And then they go away and they have to come back another year later because they stopped doing everything that made them better. We have to teach them. They have to keep doing the thing that made them better.
And that's one of the speeches I have with the patients post-surgery. I say, you know, you've got to go to therapy. Every patient post-surgery gets therapy 100% of the time. There's no exceptions. And I tell them it doesn't end 8 to 12 weeks afterwards. These are exercises you have to do 2 to 3 times a week for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Period.
And you got to find a way to learn to enjoy the program that you create for yourself to do. That's the key thing, is they got to like
it. And it's hard. People tend to, you know, I mean, that's just true of everybody, including myself. Even though you know something is good for you, but it's hard to sustain it if you don't enjoy it.
That's right. Now, you look very fit. What activities do you do?
I used to run quite a bit. And now I just more non-impact stuff. You know, I still go to the gym, but do core exercises, and I started getting into mountain biking, which is fun. I used to road bike too, but the LA traffic is just too damn dangerous.
To the mountains.
So, you know, although being on a mountain bike, you know, I've had a few falls and many scratches and scrapes, but it's so much fun.
Yeah. Don't go anywhere. There's more to come as we talk with Dr. Sadiq. If you're in the market for a bike, you want to buy your bike from a shop that has great service. Bicycles need to be serviced and maintained on a regular basis for safety. You want a relationship you can count on with the shop where you buy your bike. Helen's cares as much about servicing your bike and keeping you safe as it does about the sale of a new bike. Their tune-up packages and excellent repair service will keep your bike in perfect working order. Go to helenscycles.com. That's helenscycles.com. We're back with Dr. Sadiq. Now, how do you do everything here? You're talking about the stuff that you're teaching and how to handle the business of medicine. Most doctors, until recently, I've been meeting a lot that have done an MBA program, but until then, most doctors didn't know much about business. And now there's this new generation of doctors that are doing it. And what are the key things that you learned from the MBA that you took, or that you learned just from life and how to stay a step ahead of what was happening?
One of the major problems with med school or med training, medical training, is that they teach you zero about finances or running a business, which is very unfortunate because medicine is a business. And mm-hmm. if you can't keep your doors open because you can't pay the bills or balance the books or know how to read financial statements, then there's a good chance you can go under. And that obviously affects not just you, but your patients. And it reduces access to care. So what's happening is that many doctors are becoming salaried and they become a W-2 employee of a hospital chain. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there are still a significant portion of physicians that are independent. Now, the problem is that those independent physicians, such as ourselves, are not taught anything about how to run a business. So now we come out of med school and training. Now we have to manage an office staff. We have to do marketing. We have to balance our books, and at the same time keep operating and taking care of patients.
Yeah,
and that can be very hard because it's hard to be a ma and pa medical group nowadays. The onesies and twosies are withering because they can't keep up with larger entities. So we recognized that from the beginning, and we mean Brian Perry and mm-hmm, I. Mm-hmm. And so we said, all right, we're going to stay independent, But in order to do it right, we have to know what the best practices are. So in the beginning, it was predominantly just teaching ourselves. And one of the things that we're good at is that if we don't know something, we ask.
And who would you know to ask?
There's always somebody that knows more than you do.
Yeah.
Right? And so when we first started out, so we ask other, in the beginning was other colleagues and say, okay, how do we set up a group? What do we do? I mean, we had nothing, we had no idea how to set up an S corp or any type of corporation. These are things you have to study and learn. So we ask people, what are the steps? Then we go out and we do those steps. And so if somebody tells us, yin, don't yang, we're not going to yang.
Right.
So you have to listen to other people's advice. And so you take best practices and you say, okay, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. And then I, before I mentioned the Just for Dummies books, and it got to the point where we're doing all these things that it takes to run a practice. And we're studying to make sure we don't make mistakes. And that's where the MBA came in, because I just wanted to formalize that.
Sure.
But the key also was not just that we asked for advice, but also I had the right partner. And then it started out with Brian Perry. And I'll be honest with you, I would have made many mistakes if he didn't come to me and say, no, we're going to do it the other way. You know, and the same is true for him as well. So you got to have somebody else that's a sounding board. And, you know, no one person can be right all the time. And you need a team around you.
Yeah.
And so after that, you know, we bought in other physicians as well. And it's worked out.
Are they also partners?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Do you have any employee doctors?
We do. Right now we have... we have three, actually. But every junior partner starts that way. I was a junior partner at one point, and I was an employee. And then after 2 to 3 years, we came out and formed our own group. So our juniors,
I see.
You know, the intent is that they become a full partner by 3 years.
Almost like a law firm, huh?
It is. Same analogy.
Yeah.
It's a good analogy.
Yeah. Well, this really interests me because while I was seeing all the other doctors attaching themselves to all the big hospitals, and you know, now there's a Curlin Job Cedars Smog group, you know, and they're all becoming affiliated, and the groups keep getting bigger and bigger. I thought, I want to know how they're able to go out and do it on their own. So it's been a diligent time studying and learning as you go. And were there ups and downs, or has it been pretty much straight up?
Fortunately, we've been, it's been not straight up, but it's been a good curve.
The trend line is up. Yeah. Gee, that's good. What was one of the first successes that you said, okay, this is going to be good. It's going to work.
After Brian and I formed the group, then it was a surgery center, right? And we knew from the beginning that we wanted to control the entire patient experience.
Hmm.
And so, you know, when a patient comes in, we have the doctor that operates on them. But they still have to go to a surgery center or a hospital. They have to interact with nurses and physical therapists, et cetera. And so we wanted to be able to control as much of the quality as possible to do it our way. And, you know, when you take a patient to a hospital, it's often out of your hands.
Yeah.
So the patient may have a great experience, but they may also have a bad experience. So we wanted to control the entire experience. And so it started with a surgery center, then was this building, and now the hospital.
Where was your first surgical center?
It was a few miles from this location, but it was here in town.
Uh-huh. And it was just one operating room?
It was two ORs.
Two ORs. And then how many do you have here?
It's two ORs as well. It was just more space, but we've kept it at two ORs.
More elbow room.
There you go.
Yeah. Now tell me about this building. Tell me how you found it. They said, the thing that I read online said it was an unsolicited offer, that no one was looking to sell. You just liked the look of this building?
Yeah, it was actually Brian Perry's idea to go after this building. And so together, you know, he's, you know, it's a big building, so it has a grand presence.
It does.
And it had the space that we needed, and it was proximate to where we wanted to be. And it was unsolicited, an off-market deal, and that means we, you know, paid quite a bit for it. However, you know, we were investing in ourselves, and we knew
that
we were going to be here for many, many years. And
it wasn't just a real estate deal,
right? This is our home.
Yes.
So it would pay off in the long term, and it's already paid off.
Oh, that's amazing! So you bought it in 2015, and now 3.5, 4 years later, things are doing well.
We're growing. That's the important thing.
Yeah. I see people that I know on your marquee board, listing of the various people. I go, oh, he's over here now, and he's over here now.
Yeah, we wanted to bring in the people that think and act the way that we do and are synergistic with what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so this building is focused on spine, ortho, and pain.
Hmm. You have a pain management doctor here too?
Yes, we have a number of them. Because all those practices or specialties are synergistic. You know, they see patients that often if you have a back problem, you have a hip problem as well. Or you could have a hip problem.
That's very often.
So they need pain management, they need rehab, etc. So our focus is spine and orthopedics. And that's what we do.
Well,
and that's what this building is centered around that.
Spine and orthopedics. So there's a disc down in the marina, and they do sports and spine. Do you do sports here too?
Yeah, our new group name is DOCS, D-O-C-S, mm-hmm. DOCS, Spine, and Orthopedics. So we focus on both the surgical and non-surgical management of people with spine and ortho problems.
And what does the DOCS, D-O-C-S stand for?
The surgery center is Doctors Outpatient Center for Surgery, and obviously it's short for doctors.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's a name that people can see and recognize what we are doing.
Yes, and you can see it coming down the street. We didn't miss it driving down the street today. It's a beautiful place. You've done such an amazing job just making every single thing look really nice. Did you have an interior decorator and someone who handles the in-house marketing screens?
Oh, yes. And it gets back to you got to find the right people that can help you. And we have a big team of people, both in-house and consultants that we use to make sure we get it right.
Well, good. And now I want you to go back to putting your doctor's hat on in the surgical world. Can you see something coming down the road that I haven't heard of yet that's in the future, new technology or new techniques?
Most patients ask about stem cells. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's hope, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, it's just hope at this time.
Right.
And, you know, we'll see what happens over the next 10 to 20 years. But, you know, that's what patients ask about when they come to the office. But what we see that's more immediate and what's made a big difference in how we care for patients is we've gotten faster and better and cheaper.
Yeah.
In taking care of patients with spine problems. So we don't have to put them in the hospital and keep them there for a few days anymore. We can do it at a short stay facility or an outpatient facility that is focused on just spine and orthopedics. And so our mantra has been and is continue to be that we're going to take patients that need spine and orthopedic surgery, such as hip replacements, back fusions, artificial discs, whatever it may be, do them in a surgery center or at the surgical hospital that we just purchased.
And you have now you have another building that's on the horizon. It isn't open yet?
Oh, it's open.
And where is it?
It's on the corner of San Vicente and Olympic. It's a 20-bed inpatient hospital.
Oh, I know that one.
And we just changed it over to Doc Surgical Hospital, and all under the branding DOCS.
Uh-huh.
And that one is focused on spine and orthopedic surgeries for patients that need an inpatient or hospital stay.
So are people there right now? You have patients in the hospital?
Yeah, it's open. We've been doing cases. You know, medicine is heading to faster, better, cheaper. And mm-hmm. what that means is that, and not just my opinion, but other healthcare analysts will say the same thing, that you no longer need a 1,000-bed inpatient hospital that takes care of everything from the common cold to spine surgeries, hip surgeries, to motor vehicle accidents, to liver transplants, to heart transplants, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so what you can do is that you can divide that up into smaller centers that focus on certain things. For instance, us, we're focused on spine and orthopedics.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't mix it with ENT or GI or cardiac care, et cetera.
Let's explain what those initials mean.
ENT is ear, nose, and throat surgeons, and GI is gastrointestinal.
Yeah.
And so in our facilities, we do just spine and just orthopedics, and we stick to what we're good at. And we do it with high volume that makes it much more efficient, reduces costs, and we think gives a patient a better experience.
Well, let's tie all this together. You started working for Cedars. And what was the timeline, how you did each one of these things?
So the fellowship was with Cedars-Sinai.
Yes.
And then after that, Brian Perry and I, we became junior partners with another spine group here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years after that is when Brian and I started the group. The two of us at the time and one employee. And over the past almost 14 years now, we've grown to this.
Wow. So you bought this building in 2015. And when did you buy that hospital?
Just a month ago.
Oh, my goodness. I'm right on time to learn the breaking news.
There you go.
Okay. You're doing so many wonderful things. But I want to thank you for taking so much time out of your busy day to speak with us at Meet the Doctors.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
You've been listening to neurosurgeon Dr. Kaver Sadiq at Beverly Hills Spine Surgery. If you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode as we speak with the brightest minds in medicine, research, surgery, and much, much more. I'm Linda Huey. You can tweet to me on Twitter at Linda Huey. That's LYNDAHUEY. Say hi or tell me who you'd like to hear on Meet the Doctors. Thanks to production assistant James Cowan and to Tom Struther for audio post-production.